This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall in those Intelligence Committee classified hearings? Chris Graham here on the Street Knowledge podcast. And like a lot of you, I'm sure, I joined in and listened to as much as I could today the James Comey testimony to the Senate Intelligence Committee. And fascinating. I'm sure we were all fascinated by what we heard, those of us who did listen in. And I would caution those of you who didn't listen to either long segments or as much of the entirety as you could, be careful what you read, whether it's a liberal publication, conservative publication. You know, things do get skewed a bit, and I'm the first person to say that that's the case as a longtime member of the media. I would suggest maybe you go back, and if you can, find some clips online or whatever the case may be, because I think context is important here. I mean, I did a good bit of listening when I was running on the treadmill today. Did an 8-mile run, about an hour long run, and maybe that helped me focus even more. I wasn't looking at the pictures, I wasn't reading body language, I was just listening to words, and the words were enough, if you want to say that's the case. Interesting testimony, to say the least, from James Comey. I don't think anything surprising coming out, because we had already seen a statement from James Comey, a 7-page written statement released in advance of his testimony that served as a basis point for Senate Intelligence Committee members who were in the questioning today, Republicans and Democrats, of course, in this bipartisan hearing. And so what he had to say today, again, not really anything too terribly revealing outside of that, because, of course, what those 7 pages really set the parameters. It was interesting hearing, I guess. It's in some cases, Democrats were questioning in a way that was trying to lead into political points, and certainly there were Republicans who were trying to score some political points. But I thought, by and large, that the weight of today's hearing, to me at least the public part that we could all hear, it felt bipartisan. Among the revelations to me that stood out, one, this you already knew if you read those reports yesterday, read the actual written transcript from James Comey's early testimony, if you want to call it that, to the committee, the written part. He confirmed that on 3 different occasions he told the president personally that the president was not, at that time at least, I have to put past tense on it now, was not the subject personally of any criminal investigations related to the Russia election probe. So that's itself, though, not the big news, if you want to say. I mean, that's news, but that's not news that we hadn't already heard. We'd already been made privy to that information. We also got the sense, we got more details, I guess, because of the nature of the questioning from both Republican and Democratic members of the committee. We got a feeling that James Comey definitely felt that his interactions with the president were awkward, to say the least. That the president, he felt the president was pressuring him to lay off Michael Flynn, the now former National Security Advisor, very brief tenure as National Security Advisor, and that Comey felt that those interactions were inappropriate. He made that clear to Jeff Sessions, his at the time superior in the Department of Justice, and that as far as he knew, Jeff Sessions and his superiors in the AG's office of the Department of Justice did nothing in response to his warnings that the president was acting inappropriately regarding the Michael Flynn matter. And also, this was the one surprise to me, if I could say there was a surprise out of today's hearing. One, that James Comey, the now former FBI director, was so willing to use the word lie, or versions of that word, liar, lied, in reference to President Trump, in reference to the way he deals with political matters, I guess. And also then that, this was a stark, and this came out of left field and kind of knocked me down a bit, figuratively. I was running on the treadmill, so it didn't actually knock me down. That would be different news. That Russia in his mind, there were so many questions he said he could not answer because of the sensitive nature of classified information. But he could give the impression, and he said this directly, that Russia interfered in our 2016 elections and will do so again. That right there, to me, now that's not the headline you're going to read. The headline you're going to read is about Michael Flynn. It's going to be about the president pressuring James Comey to end the investigation. It's going to then be about whether or not that's obstruction of justice. Those are the headlines and subheadlines that you're going to read. To me, bigger than that, and I'm not trying to minimize that, but to me, bigger than that, honestly, is that Russia interfered in our elections, according to the now former FBI director. They clearly did. He stated unequivocally that Russian forces directed at the top of Russian government, he said, interfered in our 2016 elections, and that they will do so again. And in his mind, that's where this investigation needs to be focused. And again, that doesn't mean he's not minimizing either, at least the way I listen to and process what James Comey had to say. He's not trying to say let anybody off the hook, any individuals, whoever they may be, who may have been complicit as American citizens. And in fact, he did answer a question to this level. If American citizens are involved in this, then we need to take action against that. And for him to say it the way he did implied that he has information, or at least he knows of information that would implicate American citizens for working with Russian interests to advance Russian interests in interfering in our 2016 elections. But it's stunned silence is all I can offer. I'm struggling with words, as you can tell, as to how to characterize that. Because you know, I guess we've sensed that. And he also was careful to say that, in his opinion, Russian interests don't coincide with Republican or Democrat. They simply are looking for a way in to influence American elections, and they clearly have in this case. They've got us all at each other's throats, and right now American foreign policy, American domestic policy are at a loggerheads because of the nature of what happened last November, I guess you can say. So I'm someone who studied at the time Soviet Union foreign policy in college. That's a long time ago for me. I graduated college in 1994, so we're coming up on 25 years here, not too far down the road from me graduating college. But I do have a background in studying the history of Russia and its government and its foreign policy. And, you know, after the fall of the Soviet Union, at the time when I was in college in the 1990s, that's when the Soviet Union fell and the Russian state emerged after, you know, there were people talking about the end of history. And of course, that was, to say the least, it was short-sighted for anyone to suggest that just because the Cold War that had defined a roughly 50-year period had come to an end, that there'd be no further conflicts in the world. I mean, even as those words were being stated, the seeds of discord that had been sown in the Muslim world, Middle East, were rumbling enough to change the course of the state of peace, if you want to call it, in the years to come. And you know, the fact that Russia didn't take to Western democratic ideals was not surprising, given Russia's long history dealing with autocratic regimes for millennia, it seems like. Certainly centuries, millennia, thousands of years. And I'd say the Russian state and the Russian people dating back more than 1,000 years. You know, it seemed even then that it would be hard for Western-style democracy to flourish, and it certainly did not. Within short order, within about 10 years, Vladimir Putin used the democratic process to regain and reassemble a autocratic regime under his leadership that has been in place since for about 15 years now or more. And, you know, so the Soviets, the Russians, let's just call them Russians because that's what Soviets were too. The Russians lose the Cold War, but that doesn't mean they're gone, and they're not. And Putin being a KGB agent, a very savvy one, and there was lots of savviness in general across that KGB. All right, so the Russians, the Soviet Union loses the Cold War, but here we are 20 plus years later, and it's a new world. You know, in 1990 to 1992, when the Soviet Union was disintegrating and all the former republics, including Russia, were setting out a new course for themselves, there was an internet, but none of us had ever heard of it. And certainly it didn't have the impact on the world that it has now from a commerce standpoint, from a government standpoint, from an information standpoint. Let's give Russians credit. You don't want to, but let's give them credit. They have figured out how to manipulate the hell out of that system. We have hackers who disrupt our e-commerce. We have hackers who use our news sources and our social media like they're playing a fiddle to get information out, disinformation to their advantage. And certainly they're using espionage to gain access to information from a government standpoint that is being used against U.S. interest and certainly advancing Russian interests. So the fact that that Russians would be adept at this game of espionage, this game of cyber espionage, and I'm struggling for the word here because it's not one I'm sure is even coined, but this is a smart war that they're waging against us, without shooting a gun, pointing a missile, the Russians have advanced their interest very much so vis-a-vis the United States. They've weakened us. They're working to weaken Western Europe. The NATO alliance, President Trump is not willing to say that he supports NATO. The allies are against each other in lots of ways. There's lots of, we our president, duly elected, has raised issues with Japan and Germany in the recent weeks. We're really weakening our resolve here, and I don't know that it takes much. Let's just put it out there. It doesn't take much to think that a Manchurian candidate type person couldn't be more effective than what we're doing right now. If this is all an accident, I'm very surprised. Let's just put it that way too. Because this is working so well for the Russians right now. The West is in disarray. America is in disarray. And the Russians now, the Russians aren't sitting pretty. You know, the oil prices being down like they are, gas prices being where they are, their economy is really struggling to deal with that. Putin's territorial ambitions have put him under the scrutiny of the EU, NATO, the UN. It's not a very easy world for him either, but he's certainly fighting it back with what he can, throwing the kitchen sink at the U.S. from a cyber standpoint. So now I guess it gets back to the question of, what James Comey said today, effectively saying that there's no question in his mind that Russia influenced our 2016 elections and will do so again. Were Americans complicit in this? I think we can infer from what James Comey said today that it's clear that there were Americans who were complicit. Now, whether those Americans are close associates of our current president, people on the periphery, whether they are involved at all with the presidential campaign, but maybe in some other capacity, maybe in a governmental capacity, maybe in a state governmental capacity, maybe people who oversee elections. I mean, we just don't know. We publicly don't know. That's why I started this podcast off saying to the effect that I would love to be a fly on the wall of those Intelligence Committee classified briefings, because I think a lot of us would love, once you start thinking about some of the things I presented here in this podcast, we would love to know exactly what's going on. And we won't know for a while if we ever will know. But today's testimony from James Comey definitely opening a window into a world that I want to tell you, folks, if you're listening to this podcast, you're 15 minutes in, it's scary. This is scary. This is not the world we thought we had even last year, maybe a year and a half ago. I would have told you and probably did on these podcasts that our focus in the 21st century needs to be on the threat, existential threat, in a way that China poses to us. And China is not an existential threat in the sense that China has weapons pointed at us and wants to beat us militarily. It's more of an economic challenge, and certainly the number of the size of their economy and things of that nature, and the investments that the China government's making into its education infrastructure, its overall physical infrastructure, to make it a more powerful country in an economic sense. I would have told you the 21st century is going to be defined by a growing Sino-U.S. rivalry, but that will be played out, though, again, on that economic sphere. That's what I would have told you, and that's what I did tell you a year and a half ago, and even further back than that. And that was me over saying that as much as our attention has been put by certain news interests in the United States and in the West on the threat of terrorism and what it does to this world, I would say that that's really more of a crime issue, it seems to me, than this economic rivalry that was developing and is still developing between the United States and China. But now, with Russia influencing our elections, Russia working to try to influence France's recent elections, we have to assume that these efforts are ongoing in other Western countries too. We can't assume that they're using it against the U.S. and France and not using it elsewhere, or will be trying to use it elsewhere. We cannot assume that that's not the case. Russia comes back, and Russia is a country that is interesting. The economic might of Russia compared to even China is there's not even a comparison. The size of the Russian economy is a fraction of the size of the Chinese economy. But one thing that certainly weights Russia vis-a-vis the Chinese is its military might that was left over from the Cold War 20-plus years ago. They still have all those ICBMs. They still have those warheads, all those missiles pointed at the U.S. Still there. And they still have a very savvy, crafty leadership that is very willing to employ means at its disposal to advance its interests. And is clearly at this stage, based on, again, the testimony today of former FBI Director James Comey, able to project its interest. And when our elections, that is scary, folks. And I don't care what political party you're of, mindset you have, candidates you support, you got to be concerned about that. So I think that'll wrap us up for our podcast today. Thank you for listening. You know, we talk sports and politics and pro wrestling and all kinds of things on this podcast. Thank you for joining me today on this more serious, certainly politics-themed podcast. We're going to be in D.C. next week. I think I've mentioned on a couple of recent podcasts that we are efforting to set up one-on-one interviews with our two U.S. senators from Virginia. We're based in Virginia with Tim Kaine and Mark Warner. Mark Warner, we both actually will be very interesting. Tim Kaine is a member of the Armed Services Committee. Mark Warner, a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee. He was there today interviewing, asking questions of James Comey. He's actually the ranking Democrat on that committee. We're working to get interviews set up with them, and we'll hopefully be able to do that next week, meet with them in their Capitol Hill offices. And I know they're very busy, so we're not holding out hope that that's 100% guarantee, but we're working on it. And if we're able to do that, boy, that'll be great. But I'm going to be in D.C. next week. My wife, Crystal, who is the head of the Virginia chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, is in D.C. all week. For a national conference, also lobbying on Capitol Hill for money for mental health and suicide prevention research. And so I'll be there with her and also taking in some Nats games and some fun stuff like that. But definitely going to have a DC flavor next week to our AFP and also to our podcast here. So want to invite you in a little bit there. Hopefully we can get some of that flavor directly from those two senators who are very powerful. And we're going to work to do that. I want to thank you for your time today. Signing off on our podcast. As always, if you can't be good, be good at it.